your Lori Dubose, as we welcome Fairhope Building official Eric Cortinas in the studio for Community Contact. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. You're one of my favorite interviews because you're a great guy.
Well, I appreciate
and
that.
Because you have your finger on the pulse of everything that's growing and building in town.
Yes, ma'am.
And there's so much to keep up with. It can get confusing, but I'm sure you've got it all like on the back of your hand.
Well, no, but you know, it's kind of a tiger by the tail sometimes, but we do the best we can.
That's right. Now, you recently requested from the council, and they approved, hiring another building inspector.
Yes, ma'am.
How many do we have? And, of course, it's a silly question to say,
sure.
Why do we need more?
Sure. We have three full-time inspectors. One is going to be out for a good bit. And I also have an assistant building official. Now, he's spending most of his time in the field right now. So, you know, to be able to keep up with what we've got, we really need three inspectors full-time in the field with an assistant building official being able to go out and grab a few things. But the biggest thing is we're kind of log jamming getting permit applications out, because these guys do inspections all day and then have to come in and help review plans to actually issue permits. And that's what's taking a while, because they're spending all their time in the field on inspections, and we can't get things reviewed and approved in as timely a manner as we would like.
Now, I was surprised at first by the request, because this was on the heels of SB 107, which removed your need to do inspections outside of the city limits, yet in our jurisdiction. The county's taken over all of that.
Correct.
So this is just due to explosive growth and some statistics that you presented to the council. We'd
sure.
love to hear
sure.
In this interview. That's all happening in our city limits and or what has been annexed into.
It is, and also, you know, the drop date for SB 107 was we would no longer accept permits after January 1st. We had some really big projects that were already applied for and already in the review pipeline. And per the agreement, we're going to finish those out. So we have some stuff, like both of the publics started out in the county, and the build outs for the units are in the county. Now, the one at Battles Road has annexed, and I know Hunter Simmons with planning and zoning, and I'm not sure if the North Publix has yet. I know there's been a lot of discussion about that.
Okay.
But there was also, like, we have the apartment complex on Twin Beach Road, and it was 240 units with, I think, a total of 20 buildings between garages and apartments and clubhouses. That was all submitted and permitted before that deadline, so we're handling that. We also have another apartment complex out on 104, just north of, on 181, just north of 104 across from the waters. We had our pre-construction meeting. That was in before January 1. And we had our pre-con, and we're getting ready to turn all those loose. And it's another 20 buildings on that property.
That's not the same property as the Close Encounters house.
It's the same property, but the Close Encounters, well, let me back up. No, it ties to it. It's just north
okay,
of that.
Yeah.
The Close Encounters house actually sits on that corner property, which was actually we had at the Planning Commission Monday
mm-hmm.
night for commercial. There's, you know, proposed to be another Wawa station up there at that corner, and it will tie to, on the north end, what's called the Rockwell Apartments. So there's that, I don't recall, it's 24, it's 240 units.
Whoa.
At Rockwell.
And is that apartments?
It is apartments,
okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to skip around a little
sure,
bit, but
sure.
since we brought up the Close Encounters already, what happened at the planning meeting Monday night? On
yeah,
that?
No, it was, there were an approval for, you know, some commercial properties there. They, to our knowledge and per the developer, they're not planning on doing anything with the Close Encounters house now. There was some informal discussion about relocating it, but to our knowledge, there are no plans to tear that building
I'm
down.
Just calling that the property.
Sure,
but
sure.
How many acres was that?
I wouldn't okay. want to say. It's substantial.
Okay.
It's a pretty good sized property right there on the northeast
mm-hmm.
corner.
And that will include homes and businesses.
No, ma'am. That's business.
Also?
That's commercial.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
it will tie to the apartment complex on the north end.
Okay.
It all ties together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's a lot to keep up
it
with.
Is.
I don't know how y'all do it. So now, would you mind giving us some of the stats of showing just how the growth is so impactful.
Yes, ma'am. Well, what I did was, you know, because the inspector request was unbudgeted, it wasn't included in the previous budget because we wanted to wait and see what SB 107 would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ended up, you know, the workload actually has increased for us since that happened, plus finishing out the county. So I had presented the council with some justification numbers, telling them why I needed an inspector. And from October 1st through January 31st, so about a four-month window, we had issued 749 permits. That's an average of about 188 a month. Now, that is generators, land disturbance, doing work on the right-of-way, new houses, new commercial. It's everything. So, but
even,
see,
say, an addition to your home
it
or
is,
a remodel.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And see, the issue, the reason for the additional inspector was each of those plans have to be reviewed for compliance. So you're figuring almost 200 plans you have to review a month, plus the guys are averaging between 30 and 40 inspections a day, depending, 30, 35 on a normal day. So being able to get those plans and verify they're meeting our requirements, that's where we're kind of bottlenecking, is in the review process.
Okay.
So far in inspections, in that first 4 months, we have done 2,538, which is an average of about 32 a day. And that's with basically three guys, and one of those guys is out for a while. So it's 32 a day with three guys, and some of them take 5 minutes. Some of them may take an hour and a half, depending on what the inspection is. In terms of revenue, you know, there was a, I think it was a $1.2 million in permit fee revenue that was projected for the year. In the first 4 months, we've already collected $928,000 of that. So we've already collected 75% of the yearly projection in the first 4 months.
Okay.
So we're ahead of what we anticipated. You know, and I also gave them a list of projects. You know, we have the apartments, the flats at East Bay on Twin Beach. We have a large office building that's started construction at the corner of Magnolia and Section Street, right behind, right behind there.
Several people have asked me, what is that going to be? And I thought it was, it's all commercial?
It's all commercial.
Is it going to be the commercial bottom residential top?
No, ma'am. It's all commercial.
All commercial.
It's all
okay.
Commercial, but it's three-story. It's a pretty substantial building. It's a big building.
Okay.
We have renovations. You know, we just opened Aldi's. We just opened both the Publix, so ironically, we have a pretty big renovation permit application from Winn-Dixie. We have one from Walmart. They're trying to kind of clean up their spaces, and I'm assuming to be able to compete. We have three new subdivisions that have come online with Overland, which is just past Walmart heading towards the river.
Oh,
you'll
yes,
see some townhomes, and then just past that
I saw that Overland.
Residential.
Okay.
Then we have River Horse, which connects to North Station up off of Gayfer Extension.
Okay.
And then we have Live Oak, which is, we're in the process of getting information on permitting, which is directly across from Firethorn on 181, just south of Windmill Road, south of Quail Creek.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people see that pond out there along 181, and that's actually Live Oak subdivision.
Just saw some folks discussing on Facebook how all the Live Oaks were removed for the Live Oak subdivision.
And I know I saw that email, and I know that our horticulturist and planning and zoning are looking into seeing what's done. It's a little different because when you approve a subdivision, you give a protected tree list. But when they start in building individual houses, they can remove any trees that are within the building pad. So, you know,
what's the protected tree list then?
Well, it's anything that's a heritage tree, which is over a certain size, but that's something that's come up before, is looking at the overall subdivision at the planning commission level. We say, hey, you need to protect this tree and this tree. Well, when it's done and they start pulling permits, there's really no regulation. If that tree's where that house is going to be within that lot, they can take it down, whether it's...
Why don't they design the lots around the heritage trees?
Well, and we've had that discussion, and I also was appointed as the city representative on the Planning Commission starting in January. And I'm hoping some of the things I can add are, you have the planning process where they look at a development or subdivision for 3 or 4 months and they make sure it meets all the requirements.
Right.
Well, in the building department, we're spending 3 or 4 years handling that project to the end through the build out. So we sometimes see things that were part of an approval that may have a conflict when it's time to actually build it.
Sure, that's why when there's the planning commission meeting, I get the agenda emailed to me, and the packet is attached. And
it is.
If I make the mistake of hitting print on everything, 140 pages later,
don't even do
because
that.
Because your department may have 8 or 10 pages of why or why not this should be approved and what should be changed. So sure. You try to warn the commission ahead of time of those issues.
That's what I'm hoping to add, is kind of seeing it through to the end, because, you know, before I would just kind of somewhat see it on the planning end and then handle, you know, everything once it was approved. Now kind of being more involved on the front end and the back end, I hope I can add that perspective a little bit. So let's see. Let's see how it works.
That brings up a good point in my mind I want to mention, because you've explained this before. We have a planning department and a building department.
Correct.
Tell us the difference.
Yes. Essentially, the rule, planning and zoning tells you what you can build on a property, where the buildings can go on the property, relation to setbacks, lot coverage. Once planning tells you what you can build, how tall it can be, and where it has to be, it comes to the building department, and we tell you how to build the building, how to build the site per what planning and zoning has approved.
Okay.
So it's a two-step process.
Right. So you work very closely together.
We do.
I think that's a great idea for you to be on that commission.
Well, I've kind of avoided it.
Like, you need another thing to do.
Well, that's okay.
But
that's
they
okay.
need your knowledge.
But if I can help, and I mean, you know, Hunter and Mike and all the folks in the planning, we work real close with them. You know, we're friends and try to help each other out and work together on things. And if it's something I can add, that's fine. Hopefully I can not talk as much. I tend to talk a lot, so I'll try to curb that a little bit.
In my neighborhood alone, there's 4 projects going on, 3 remodels or additions and a new build. What requires a permit and what does not?
Sure. My rule of thumb is, if there's something that requires an inspection and has a code section governing it, we require a permit. But like landscaping, unless it's a major strip of the site where you've got to have erosion controls in place to keep, you know, stuff from coming off, that wouldn't necessarily require a permit. Interior doors and trim, flooring, cabinets, we don't require permits from that because we're not going to come in and inspect it. And it's not fair to charge a citizen a permit fee for something we're not going to look at. To a large degree, the permit fees are covering the time and effort and vehicle cost and everything for the inspector to come see it. So, you know, aesthetics of that kind, painting, we don't require permits for all that because it's just, we're not going to come look at it. But if you're changing any plumbing around, electrical, trying to open up or move any walls, trying to do any kind of add-on or expansion, stripping sheetrock off walls, which is now going to show us the underlying plumbing and electrical, we need to make sure that it's safe, especially in some of the older houses.
Yeah, I had a recent experience with that. A large oak tree fell on the back of my house. Luckily, just the laundry room and my back deck. So my house, you know, internally didn't get damaged.
Right.
But long story short, I had some electrical damage.
Right.
And had to get permitted to get that up to code and repaired. But when it came to just patching the roof and replacing some metal sheets, I didn't get a permit. Patching for repair?
Well, the biggest thing for that, if it's minor repair, we have amounts that you're allowed to replace before you have to do the whole roof. And the reason for that is we have what we call fortified requirements, which are kind of a third-party requirement that we've adopted. During Hurricane Sally, and this happened at my house. I had a whole lot of damage at my house. I live in the county. Water getting in, roofs being damaged, and water coming in through the roof sheathing. I had water in every ceiling of my house. Mm. But what helps prevent that is what we call a sealed roof deck, where they strip it all the way down to the wood. They nail it so that it's structurally sound and connected. Winds aren't going to pull it off. Then they put a waterproofing membrane down over the wood and then put the shingles. So even if you lose the shingles, then you've got a water barrier to keep that mm-hmm. water from coming in. The other reason we issue permits is because there are specific state licenses that are required for roofs, for roofers. And, you know, the other thing that I tell folks, I get calls every week from insurance companies, people trying to get discounts on their roofs because they're built to a certain standard. If I don't have a permit, I can't prove that. And so we have no paper trail showing that. And that has meant the difference from some people getting 30% off their insurance or not getting 30% off because we have no way to prove that it was actually done to that standard. And so, once it's done, you can't go back.
So permit for a new roof or how much of a partial replacement?
Yeah, if you can check and get a permit for even, you know, replacements. If we don't have to have one, if it's very minor stuff, we're not going to ask you. If you're replacing a ridge vent or you've got a few shingles of patch, we're not going to worry about that. We do want to verify your roofer's licensed because that's a state law.
Okay.
But if it's over 100 square feet in a spread out or a distributed area, we're going to look at having that roof replaced because going in and just patching, if you've got an older roof and it doesn't have underlayment, it doesn't have any kind of water barrier, that was our biggest issue during Sally. Were roofs being torn off and water getting into houses. So we take a pretty strict line with roofs, but
that's
for
a bit
the
surprising.
Owner.
That's a bit surprising that the city could require someone to have a new roof.
We can't. If there's damage and you're coming back to replace it, if it's over a certain amount, our city code states that it has to be replaced. And I have had, that was one thing during the hurricane that I really felt more useful with. I had battles with insurance companies every day, not wanting to pay to replace an entire roof, wanting to just spot patch.
Right.
And I sent letters to dozens of insurance companies requiring the roof be replaced.
So actually, this ordinance could help people.
It did. It helped a lot of people.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. We're speaking with Eric Cortinas, building official with the City of Fairhope here at WABF. Eric, what else would you like to mention that I haven't thought to ask?
The other thing that we do need the public's help on is if, and we're seeing hundreds and hundreds of generators installed, and we really need the public's help to make sure that their contractors are getting permits for the generators. And the reason we permit the generators is there are areas and places where those are installed that are very unsafe. Right after the hurricane, we had a lot of companies dropping down generators because people didn't have power and they were in a hurry. Well, then the gas department started getting carbon monoxide complaints because they mounted it too close to a window and the exhaust was exhausting back into the house. So, you know, generators are they're a pretty significant safety issue. I mean, that's a big electrical system. It's a big power source. And we are finding unpermitted generators where the contractor just doesn't contact us. And we're finding them all over the place. And some of them are right next to a bedroom window. Can't be there for the safety of the resident.
Right.
The wiring to the disconnect that kicks the generator on is not correct. That could happen. A generator kicks on, spark, and can cause a fire. So it's for the safety of the people that have them. And we really would like for anybody who is planning on doing that, either call us about a permit or make your contractor show you the permit card that they did get a permit.
Okay.
Because we're finding dozens and dozens that were done without permits, and now we're having to backtrack and find contractors and threaten them to come back and get it fixed and get it right and do the right thing for our citizen. And in a lot of cases, you know, our citizens are not getting the quality product that they paid for, and they don't know it because they don't understand how the installation's supposed to go. And that's one of the things, that's life, safety, health, and welfare, and that is the number one reason we're here. And so, you know, we live in this community, we care about everybody in this community, and we want to make sure they're safe, and we want to make sure that they're getting what they're paying for and quality work.
Very good. What else do you think a citizen might want to know about the building department and what you do that we may not be aware of?
Sure. Well, we have, you know, right-of-way work. I know people, we're getting a ton of calls about all of the fiber install, people digging in their yard, putting in underground fiber. There's a couple of things. One, that's a utility, and if people have a chance to tie to fiber, they're going to love it. I know I did, but it at least gives you that opportunity. Most people need to be aware that, you know, your property line doesn't go all the way to the curb. There is a right-of-way there. So at some point within the front yard, there's an area that's green and that you mow probably that is actually city right-of-way.
Right.
Beyond that, going into the property, a lot of times there's also a utility easement that is on your private property, but the utility company has the legal right to come in there, and if they have to dig to install, it's on your property, but they are also required when they're done to restore it back to the original condition. And, you know, we have John Thomas is our right-of-way supervisor. He now has help with a young man named David Thomas, and they are on these contractors every day making them replace grass, get rid of low spots, make sure that folks' yards are being restored.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a utility, and they have a right. They have a franchise agreement with the city. They have a right to be in those areas. We're going to make sure that they do things the right way, and if they damage your yard, they're going to have to fix it. But, you know, just we get a lot of those calls. They're digging up my front yard. Mm-hmm. Well, they're in
the
utility easement.
Most of the time they put it back. I'm amazed how they make it look like they weren't there in most cases.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's one reason why, because y'all are making sure of it.
That's correct. We've got folks that are out there keeping their eye on them and handling the contractors and taking care of them.
Good. What about the Arts Alley? And you can hear the beeping in the background as they're bringing in some heavy equipment. Can you give us any update on that, or is that...
That's really a public works project.
Okay.
You know, I have a, you know, I kind of look, we as a group looked over the plans of what they're doing. But I don't want to misinform anyone. I think Richard Johnson could probably answer that question.
Okay.
Our public works director give you better
You'll
information.
Just probably inspect the bathroom when
we will. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's about the only structure.
It
I
really
think,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's about everything that we have out there.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, Eric, very informative. Anything else that you want to mention?
No. Well, you know, it's just, you know, you're going to see work all over the place. Please know, you know, we have a lot of folks that kind of think that the city just willy-nilly approves things. And, you know, we've got hundreds of pages of zoning ordinance. We've got hundreds of pages of subdivision regulation. We have thousands of pages of building electrical mechanical codes. And this is a pretty heavily regulated community. It's not easy to come in here and build, and the developers will tell you that Fairhope can be a little frustrating, but we spend a tremendous amount of time making sure they're following the city rules. So, you know, we've got one of the other things is I've probably got 8 to 10 individual build out permit applications for the various public lease spaces at both of them.
Right.
At the Polo Crossing, which I believe is right next to Wolf Bayview, that building that's going up there next to Wolf Bayview mm-hmm. Funeral Home, there's going to be 5 tenant spaces in that. One is a Jersey Mike's, one is Chicken Salad Chick. Chicken Salad Chick just submitted. We've got Mediterranean Sandwich. We've got probably half a dozen new eateries that are going to be in these different spaces.
Is it still Five Guys where the Pizza Hut was?
Well, Five Guys, actually, I was emailing them before I got here. They're looking to get their final inspections on Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
We'll see if they're ready for us. But they're close to wanting to start or open.
Good. And what's it going in the what's the Publix called that's out by 34?
The Publix on down at Battles? That's Publix at Battles Road.
Publix, what's going in there in the front?
Those are just tenant lease space. We have not received any permit applications for that building.
Okay.
That was part of Publix owns that, and I'm assuming they're going to lease that out. The rest of it, you know, they have an agent that goes out and finds leases and helps them get into their spaces. I don't know of anything specifically that's going in that outbuilding yet, but it's going to be just, you know, basic tenant leases.
Okay. Well, so informative. Thank you so much, Eric, and we appreciate everything that your department does. We know you can't stop the growth, but you can make sure it's built properly.
Well, that's about what we can do. And if they have a right to build, they have a right to build. But they, if they decide to build here, then by default, they're agreeing to meet our regulations. So that's where we come in to kind of hold their feet to the fire and make sure they are meeting our regulations.
Thank you so much. Eric Cortinas, Fairhope Building Official. Very informative. If you missed part of that or you want to tell a friend, you'll be able to listen to it later at WABF1480.com.